and welcome to the latest edition of the Daggers and Lids podcast. We are recording Thursday evening UK time. It must be quite late where you are, Lydia, in the United Arab Emirates. Hang on, what am I talking? It's not that late. It's 9 o'clock.
Well, it's late for me, and it's late for you actually, Daggers. This time, isn't it?
We're both. What are you trying to say? I'm not going for an early bird dinner somewhere. I don't get myself tucked in by 7 o'clock in the evening.
It's 9 o'clock here, but I do enjoy going to bed. But we have just seen a brilliant game, and we thought we'd jump on to discuss it.
Well, we thought, do you know what? We did record something a little bit earlier, okay? And then we had, obviously, you were watching the game over in Dubai. I was watching the game here. This is the first semi-final between Australia and South Africa. We just texted each other going, we've got to talk about this. We've got to talk about what has just happened. Well, what has just happened is that Australia, who have held the trophy since 2018, they were beaten... the West Indies won it in 2016, but Australia have held the World T20 trophy since then. They have been absolutely dominant over the last decade, possibly even longer than that. But they have been defeated by South Africa in the first semi-final at the Dubai International Stadium. Australia won 34-5. South Africa knocked them off for two with 2.4 overs remaining. Annika Bosch, with 74 not out from 48 deliveries. Laura Wolfart with 42 from 37. The partnership they put on was 96. And I'm just sat here aghast. And please don't think, if you are listening to us in Australia, please do not think that this is delight that Australia are at. Absolutely not. But over the course of time, when a side has been as brilliant and as dominant and have set the standard for excellence as Australia have, you know, you can't help but sort of root for an underdog and hope that there is a bit of a change in the guard and upset the apple cart to cause newsworthy headlines, more exposure for the women's game and subsequent. But, I mean, an astonishing game of cricket, led.
Oh, it was amazing. And I was so impressed with South Africa and their composure. Laura Wolfart, for me, was unbelievable in terms of captaincy. I watched her in the huddle. She was composed. She was looked as if she was motivating the players. You know, when everyone is just listening intently, taking every single word on board that she says on the pitch with ball in hand. Again, great composure. The bowlers were brilliant. They were able to restrict the boundaries. And then with the bat, that composure just continued. And Australia didn't have the answers, and I was actually just watching the game with Ali Mitchell downstairs, and we just said to each other, what do Australians look like when they lose? Because we've not seen, do they cry? Do they throw things or what? But as you said earlier, it's not about the Australians losing, it's about the fact that someone has been able to beat arguably the greatest cricketing side there has ever been in a semi-final.
Absolutely. South Africa got close in the last one in their own backyard when they were defeated in the final. And you know what? This is maybe yet another stepping stone for them. They have an opportunity to go on and win it now against one of the West Indies or New Zealand. And don't forget, I threw a message out on social media to say we're going to talk about England. We are going to talk about England, and we're going to talk about them lengthy and answer the questions which I asked from you. You sent questions, not you specifically, Lydia. I mean, you, the public, and our listeners and viewers sent in a load of questions. We are going to get round to them. We're going to cover them thoroughly. But this is kind of too big of a deal to not talk about right now. I was surprised with Australia. And I think what's lost it for them, I don't think it's the bowling and fielding. And yes, Annika Bosch played absolutely sensationally, taking nothing away from South Africa. They totally deserve that.
Yeah.
But I don't think they bowled well enough South Africa to warrant going at 5 and over for 10 overs, which Talia McGrath and Beth Mooney did. I'm thinking, when are you going to start with the batting depth that you've got? And it was shown a little later on when Litchfield and Perry came to the crease. That Litchfield cameo, 16 from 9 balls, Perry 31 from 23, showed you how quickly you could score out there. So yeah, that, for me, is where the game was lost.
Yeah, it looked, Tylee McGrath really struggled. She's normally so strong through that offside, but she struggled against Mlaba and also Chloe Tran, the two left-armers, because what they were doing was just taking the pace off and actually bowling really straight to her or following her. And she just couldn't get the pace of the pitch to play through the offside, which she normally does. And it was that they didn't score a boundary. I don't know the exact number, but for a long, long time, up until one point, they only had 4 boundaries. And that might have even been well up to the 10th over. It was a phenomenal performance, but it just shows that sides like Australia do have weaknesses. And for South Africa, they have beaten them quite recently as well. So I just wonder how much confidence that would have given them coming into today.
Does that now, Lid, do you think, does that make South Africa favourites?
I think because they have gathered all of these experiences, they've also gathered wounds as well from the final. And I always think someone or a team who has had a wounding experience, a really bad experience where they just missed out in the final, that is the best motivator of them all. And with the characters that they got in there, they're the ones now going into the final who are thinking, this is ours now. I don't know what you think, but it's a great chance.
I really do think they have to be favourites. Just looking at that batting depth, and I'm glad they took advice, my advice as well, of moving Marizan Kapp up to 3. That's right. They didn't have it. Still 70-odd in no balls. But, hey, we can be wrong. We're allowed to be wrong. These are opinions, and we are here to be shot down. But I think that's a hugely significant performance in the scope of the women's game. And it almost just says, does this burst the Australian bubble? Does this poke the Australian bear even more?
We're
in line for 20 years of dominance. Who knows?
Yes.
All I'm saying is that this is, a significant moment in the span of women's cricket. So congratulations to South Africa. They are through to the final. They will meet one of New Zealand or the West Indies. They will play tomorrow. Quickly, hunch on that one, Lid.
Oh, so a good question, actually. I'm going to go for New Zealand, mainly because it's out at Sharjah. How about you?
Yeah, I'm leaning that way, probably a 60-40 New Zealand way for me. But I tell you, Matthews gets going. So I think they've got a little bit more info on Kian Joseph now, and I don't think necessarily they will probably bowl the same way as England did to her. But yeah, just leaning towards a bit more depth in the New Zealand camp. But I've got to say, I think South Africa are strong favourites for this for this title. We shall find out. I have been wrong before. We shall.
No, surely not.
I know. Crazy, crazy to think. Right, let's get back to what was originally the crux of this podcast, and that is the elimination of England. And this was against the West Indies, where England set 142 runs to win, a total that I think we both of us thought was a pretty reasonable one set. And the West Indies knocked it off with consummate ease. Kiana Joseph and Hayley Matthews, the main contributors with the bat. Or were England the main contributors to their own downfall? So many catches going down. The bowling, I cannot remember, Lydia, a worse power play performance from England in all of the time I have watched them. What are we talking now? 12 years that I've been watching the England women. I cannot remember a worse one. This, on a huge amount of levels, this is very, very poor for England to go out at the group stage, is it not?
Yeah, it's hugely disappointing. And I agree with you, Daggers. I think they actually batted well in that first half. I thought that is a decent score and it's a defendable score. They'd been playing really good cricket coming into the tournament. Obviously had a decent prep prep camp as well in Abu Dhabi. They've won their first three games. I think you could look back at their results and say, okay, could they have beaten Bangladesh better? So that net run rate could have been better as well, because ultimately what they've ended up missing out on is 0.3 in net run rate. And it's such small margins. But if you're one of the top teams, you have to make sure that you do everything you can to get a spot in that semi-final. So, the batting I thought was fine. I had no issue with the decision for Charlie Dean to be promoted up the order. I think because of the conditions and the way that we play, we can't whack the ball like the West Indians did. So the way that Charlie Dean, the intention of that, I thought was the right one. But with the ball, I think it just highlighted how much they miss Heather Knight as a captain. And she's had a bit of criticism in the past, but I think it just showed actually she is the right person for the job. I don't know if, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that has been one of the biggest sort of underlining features of that performance is that, I mean, look, we've got to be brutally honest here. Absolutely, that's what we're paid to do. That is, you know, we're commentators and you know, we watch a lot of the England women. And I thought tactically, without Heather Knight as captain, they were lost. I didn't think Heather went had a good night tactically. And there's certain things that you feel that you kind of got to know. And I'm surprised that these things didn't happen. You know, I mentioned about some of the bowling changes. You know, you've got the number one bowler in the world in Sophie Eccleston here. Now, she is your trump card. Now, let's forget the catches for a second. I'll come back to it, don't worry. After the 10th over, after a drinks break, after the batters just have a moment of not concentrating, of no focus, or so, that's when you get Sophie Eccleston. As soon as you get the wicket, Dottin comes in. You get Eccleston on, because Dottin has no clues against Sophie Eccleston. I've watched the two battle against each other loads of times, and she doesn't have a clue against her. And so it proved. You leave her too long, the game is gone. Yeah. And I think in that instance, you know, there was opportunities for England to salvage that match, and getting Dottin out would have left Matthews out the door, Dottin out the door, Joseph out the door, and then you're asking the new batters to come in at a runner ball against what can be a very good attack, even though it wasn't on that particular night. But there is an opportunity then to squeeze and try and salvage the game from there, even though you were in a losing position. So I think these are certain things. And tactically, I don't think Nat did a great job, if I'm being brutally honest. I wonder about the future of England's captaincy after Heather Knight. But to go back to your point, I think that now I think Heather Knight's position as captain is more secure than it has ever been. Because I don't see who would take over if she wasn't captain. I don't see a captain out there.
I think people forget as well what she brings with the bat. There's been so many situations where it has been her and Nat Sivabrant where they've lost quick wickets and they've got to rebuild and then kick on. And Heather does that so brilliantly. She reads the game really well. And her running between the wickets, she's not the quickest in the team. She will openly admit that. But her ability to judge a two, to know what is her limit and when she can come back, she will push her limits to the maximum. So, yeah, I think that exposed the leadership for England and just how much they missed her.
That's leadership. Let's talk bowling and fielding. It was a bad night. I mean, a really bad night. And to the level that England have set themselves to drop that many catches, five catches, I would say four and a half catches. I think one of Bouchier's was a tough, it was a half chance, I think. But Dunkley's drop, Capsey's drop, and two others of Maya Bouchier's. And again, I find her being the, dropping those catches astonishing, because I still believe she's one of the best fielders in the country. And if anyone has watched as much cricket, the women's game that we have, I will die on that hill. She is one of the strongest fielders, not just in the country, in the world. She's excellent. Yeah. She's had a stinker. She's had an absolute stinker. And I think when that third catch came her way, her head had gone. Thinking about it too much and her head had gone. But you cannot, Joseph gets his half century. She wins player of the match. You've dropped her four times.
Yeah.
Four golly catches. She's 52 for four. Mm. And you take any one of those, it's a completely different game.
Yeah.
And I just find, not just that though, I also think that England's bowling, you know, they kept bowling into a slot. What do you do when someone plays the way that she does? You throw it wide outside of off stump and then you just drag your length back a little bit, get her reaching for it instead of in her arc. They bowl so much into her arc. Now, just a final point on that. Yes, they bowled enough balls to get her out because they got her out four times without her. You know, so you can't be too harsh on that. But there were elements where if she's just going to keep playing that one shot, then you keep bowling in that one area that she cannot hit it.
Mm-hmm.
Are you stop now, Liz?
No, it's a fair point. But it's also, I love it when you come off your long run daggers, but it's also that the runs that came with it, when you count the drop catches that then conceded runs, it was 14 extra runs in total. And obviously no one means to drop catches, but you have to, in a way, think about, okay, why were those catches dropped? Was it the pressure? Was it they were fatigued mentally and physically, so they couldn't get their technique right to take the ball cleanly? And these are things, because they lost, we will naturally look into things in more detail. But it's getting the balance right of being objective with it and actually addressing, actually, these are the proper issues, but these are just sort of residual things that come up when you lose. Does that make sense?
Yes, but I also think that given what England have at their disposal, given all
the resources,
given the fact, you know, that there is a lot of money, you've got to set yourself, you know, the minimum, the absolute minimum. You can't tell me South Africa have got what England have got regarding resources. Right? They've just gone and beaten Australia. You cannot tell me that. And I think, you know, the absolute minimum for the England women's team was the semi-finals. That is your, not what's the opposite of a ceiling? Floor. I'm just looking up mine at the moment, just checking what the opposite is. But that is your floor. And getting to the semi-final, I just think that is well, well below where England should be looking. And you should be looking at things that go wrong, even in victory or defeat. But I'm sorry, there was some glaring things there which became very apparent. And you know what, Lid? We watch it a lot and we sort of bring up things as we see them, and it's for these key moments that we talk about. During the season I'm talking about, and over in the winter when we go and watch them. These bilateral series, and it's all building up to these moments.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't get them right, you've got to have a look at what led to that.
Yeah.
And you know, there's a variety of different things. We will get onto that. Let's answer some of your questions that you were so kind enough to send in. I've got to get them off my Twitter feed. so just bear with me as we do that. So let's kick off. This is interesting. This is actually from Australian women's cricket. Hang on. Australian women's cricket with very little context. So it is an Australian who might not be as chirpy as they may be. And they say, hello. This is no banter, as it might seem from the name of this handle, but we want to know. A, if England missed the trick when they opted to go with just one genuine pacer, and B, what could have been the reason for giving the 16th over to Dean when she didn't look that confident? I'm going to gloss over B because you're looking around for bowling, you get a gut feeling it's Dean, and yes, she didn't bowl well that night, but I, that's just a sort of very, very small aspect for me. It's something that could be hit or miss. But let's talk about this. Did they miss a trick when they opted to go with just one genuine pacer?
Are they asking about with that starting 11, or are they talking about?
My guess would be, because I'm not quite sure who else you really got to choose from outside of who they did pick. So my guess would be the squad. The squad going out to the UAE, which somebody else asked as well about the squad and did they pick it. I think it was Ian Oakley who asked about, was this the right squad for this World T20? So let's sort of answer both of those in this particular
I mean, the one thing that we both said, I think we did a chat about the squad selection, didn't we? And we sort of tried to predict who would get in and who wouldn't. And I think the one name that we both would have loved to have seen there was Lauren Filer. But the reason why she wasn't there is because obviously it was going to be in Bangladesh. So they wanted to go spin heavy, which is why Lindsay Smith got the nod. And Lindsay Smith, for me, now moving forwards, I think should be in that squad anyway. So suddenly it comes down to, can you bring Lauren Bell and Lauren Filer with you, or do you have to pick one or the other? And hindsight is a brilliant thing, isn't it? Because Lauren Bell, we know that she can cause opposition's problems. I suppose that the point of difference, though, on a pitch like Dubai, if we're talking about them, the game that they lost, the point of difference would have been that extra pace, to have had someone like Lauren Filer who could have come in and bowled a bouncer to Joseph that actually could have been the way to get her out. So yeah, it obviously it's a question that we have to answer, and it's a hindsight thing, but on reflection, extra pace from someone like Filer would have been pretty handy. Would you agree with that?
I wouldn't agree with the fact it's hindsight. I think we said it at the time. Saying I would take Lauren Filer because she is a bigger point of difference. If you pick one of Filer or Bell, one's got 7 mile an hour on the other.
And
I think if you pick, I agree with the selection in that you pick one or the other. I don't think you pick both in that side. But that is a bigger point of difference for me. And I think genuine pace on those sorts of surfaces is a bigger difference than, say, the 70 mile an hour that Lauren's bowling. She, again, didn't have a great night in the West Indies. I wondered why Lindsay Smith didn't keep her place. I really do. That low trajectory, difficult to get underneath the ball. The two main protagonists for the West Indies are going to be Hayley Matthews and DeAndre Dottin, both right-handers, and that left arm are going against it, and she skids it on. She's a very difficult proposition. But yeah, I agree. I think Lauren Filer should have gone. And I think I would argue that there is a good argument for her to have played. But that's the way they decided to go. But that's how we saw it as well.
Yeah.
Sam Routledge asks, it would be interesting to hear a dissection of Alex Hartley's comments regarding the team's fitness. Now, let me contextualise this as I go to another app on my phone, because I'm going to have to read it off there as well. This is the BBC Sport website. And basically, Alex Hartley was giving her opinion, the former England World Cup winner, was giving her opinion on England's exit. She told Test Match Special, I'm not going to name names, but if you look at them, you know. You know who's blowing a gasket and who isn't. About 80% of the England team are fit and athletic enough, but there are girls in that side who are letting the team down when it comes to fitness. There's going to be a lot of questions asked, and some of them, rightly so, on fitness. England need to get fitter. That's what Alex Hartley said. John Lewis responded, being asked if that was fair. He said, no, not really. I don't actually know. We train really hard. Our players are very fit. I'm surprised that people would say that. Actually, fitness has nothing, absolutely nothing to do with us losing that game. Our players work incredibly hard around their physical fitness across the board. Hartley finished off by saying, Australia have got 15 or 16 athletes, genuine athletes, says Hartley. They have the best leg spinner in the world in Amanda Jade Wellington. That doesn't even get in their squads anymore because she is not fit enough. So, our response to that. Lydia, you kick us off.
I heard and saw what Alex Hartley said. It's one of those things where, going back to what I said earlier, when a team loses, you try and pinpoint all the different things for that loss. And I think the fitness for that particular game might not have been one of the reasons that they lost. But moving forwards, they might look at it and think, actually, is that an area that we can improve on? Because if you, what I would like them to see them do is compare themselves to Australia and look at, have asked themselves five questions. Ask themselves, are we better at cricket than Australia? Are we better cricketers than than Australia? Are we mentally tougher than Australia? Do we perform as well under pressure as Australia? Are we fitter than Australia? Include that question in there and whatever other questions you want to ask. And if any of those questions bring to light that actually, no, we're not. And it might not have been in that particular game, but from a bigger picture point of view, I understand why she said it, but it might not be... that might not have been the reason for the reason that they lost, if that makes sense.
It does make sense, and it might not be the reason that they lost specifically, but I agree with her. I have to say, I do agree with her. I think England are not fit enough, I think, and that in that there are... and look, this is difficult for me to talk about because it is the elephant in the room, especially, you know, being a fella. You know, if I say this... I'm glad Alex has said it because it's a topic that never gets mentioned in the women's game, and I think it should. Mm. And if I mention it, I would get lambasted for it. I would. Mm. And that's the world we live in. And you know, it's something that you know, I should be able to say. But you know, do I think that some of the England players are fit enough? No, I don't think they are. And... Now, did that have any effect on them winning or losing that particular game? Maybe not. There is lots of different factors, but I'm glad she said it because it brings into the open the topic of fitness in the women's game. And I do agree with her. Mm. Not only in energy sapping conditions, which you are in right now. You can say better than anybody. You're in the UAE right now, and it is stinking hot. And it is stinking hot when the sun goes down.
Yeah.
And in energy sapping conditions, that is when the fitness counts.
Mm.
And so does it mean that you are more switched on for a longer period of time if you are physically fit? Yes, it does.
Mm.
It, your focus is that much more. So I think the comments were fair. I do. I think she was asked a question, she answered it, and I think that if you were to compare, like going along the list of questions that you had just mentioned there, if you were to say to me, who's fitter, Australia or England, I'd say Australia are.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they are. And so It's a touchy subject. Coaches don't like being accused of it being an issue within the game.
Yeah.
but then bowling badly and fielding badly are also things that they don't like hearing either. So yeah, I think that's where I stand on it as well.
Yeah.
I always think we can all, you know, be fitter. I go back to when I was playing.
Mm.
And, of course, I had very little career. But if I was playing, I never wanted to be dropped because I wasn't fit enough. I was a machine. Mm. At Leicestershire especially, I was an absolute machine. I wanted to be dropped because I wasn't good enough.
Yeah, it's a fair enough approach, yeah.
Not to have that fitness thrown at me. Well, you're not fit enough. Because is it? Well, when you look like I did back in the day, I say, you know, that wasn't something they could throw at me. And I don't think, at the moment, I think it's something that can be thrown at the England side. So is any more to add?
No, I don't think so. Yeah, I think it goes in, part of the reflection that they should be doing is just looking at every single thing in the setup, saying, right, what can we do better? And if that is one of them, then absolutely it has to be addressed.
Okay. Abby asks, it's another one with an Australian badge. They're really enjoying England's demise, I would imagine, as vice versa, I'm sure it is now. But I think this is a fair enough question. Is their insistence on entertain and inspire getting in the way of just playing smart cricket?
That's a good question, isn't it?
That's a very good question.
I think
it's something that I brought up on the last pod.
Yes,
it?
We'd
heard from Sarah Glenn on an interview and heard from Lauren Bell, and they just sort of, we want to entertain and inspire. It's almost like a jargonistic quote that they feel like they've got to get into, you know.
Yes, yeah.
If you win a lot, then that does the job, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. it's an interesting one. I feel that could have come off the back of seeing how successful Basball was and how that sort of really got people behind the test team because of the way that they were playing the game. So I'm guessing that could have come from John Lewis because he'd been involved in that environment. So, you know, are challenging the players to say, look, let's go out to entertain and inspire. Great. But yeah, I fundamentally agree with what you've said, Daggers. I think that is second and third to the message of let's win games of cricket. And the inspiring and entertaining will follow pretty easily, to be honest.
Just trying to find some more of the questions that were asked. Many of them have been, but I'm just going on my social. I'm having to do this as a live. So why don't you print out the questions, Daggers? That's because my printer's bust behind me. I can't do that. So I'm just going through them. There were lots and lots, and I think Ian Oakley I mentioned did ask about that. So there's questions about the future of England's captaincy. I think. You know, who are the candidates? Here we go. Gary Moss. Does Heather Knight stay on as captain? If so, who is the future England captain? And there are other questions in there, but I like that part of it. Does Heather Knight stay on as captain? If so, who is the future England captain?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think Heather does stay on as captain, but I think they have to think about and start thinking about who could potentially replace her. Obviously, Nat Siverbrunt would be an obvious one for many reasons. Whether she wants to do it or not, who knows? But I actually really like Charlie Dean. I think we both like Charlie Dean. Yeah. Because the way that she plays the game is as if she's been playing it for a lot longer than she has. And whether that's come from her dad and how much of a good cricketer he was, you can just tell that she's got that cricket brain. She reads the game exceptionally well. But again, that's one of the challenges for England moving forward. And a question that they should maybe think about asking themselves is how do we get, you know, four or five people to pick from as the next England captain? Because at the moment, unfortunately, we couldn't say other names, I don't think, from the current England squad as to who could be captain. But I don't think that's unfair to say.
No, it absolutely isn't. And I'm just trying to think, and I know Sophie Eccleston captains the Manchester Originals and Nat Siverbrunt the Trent Rockets. I know Charlie Dean did 1 year of captaincy with the London Spirit, but that's when she was very young. And I'm trying to think of the other name that's completely.
Amy, did you mention Amy Jones?
Yeah, Birmingham Phoenix. Yeah. I don't see them as captains and as leaders. I really don't. And I lean to your. I don't lean. I think that Charlie Dean. It's a bit worrying that we're going down a lot of these players and actually thinking who could possibly do it.
Yeah.
Whereas I go back to actually your era. Of and you think of Lott, and Lottie was Lottie and didn't need any really assistance, but she had it. She needed it. There was you, there was Jenny Gunn, there was Anya Shrubsole, and I thought all who had fantastic cricketing knowledge in there. Aaron Brindle, Sarah Taylor. There was some proper cricket heads on there. Mm. And I do wonder if a lot of the... and this is... I wonder the ability to think for oneself and think on one's feet has been sort of is not necessarily there as much as it was in the women's game as it maybe might have been previously. I think they're set out with plans and game plans and sort of instructions, and when those don't necessarily go to plan, they're lost a little bit and they sort of can't go off script where you need to in the game of cricket. I do wonder about that. I also wonder about not just that, but also this idea with England about the preparation. I'm going back to to something you picked on, the prep. The prep was great. Yeah, it was great. But given that prep, the result of being knocked out after the group stages just ain't, that just ain't going to fly. Mm. You know, they don't play any domestic cricket at all. I mean, some do. They play the odd game here and there and stuff. But you know, a lot of these players were pulled out because of workload management and because of, you know, the miles as we build up to the World Cup. I'm sorry, but to me, that's bollocks. It's utter bollocks. If you don't think the standard is good enough or for them to be playing at domestic level, then go out there, get selected, go and play and go and smash it in a 50-odd game. Go and get a massive 100. Show us how good you are. Get more overs in the belt. If you're trying things, get it done in domestic cricket. You know, I find it astonishing that there was no domestic cricket played by a lot of those players pre the Pakistan T20 series. They just went and played. You know, I don't understand that. It doesn't sit well with me. People are more than happy to be put right. But it's that's my opinion. I find that very difficult. The standard will get better, funnily enough, if you play your internationals in it.
Yeah.
But I also think you get better as a cricketer, and nothing recreates match situation. You can do 100,000 high catches in practice, but nothing recreates match situations. Doing it when the pressure on, when it means something.
Yeah.
And I don't think the England players do that, not nearly enough.
Yeah. And I think it's when you look at the purpose of domestic cricket, the reason of it is to bridge the gap between your domestic setup and international cricket. And what you want to have is your England players being stress tested within that setup domestically to make sure that they are still coming into series in form, and even using it as a selection tool. You know, it's the oldest tool in the book when you're picking a squad is who is performing domestically. And I know sometimes that changes, obviously, with the men's side at the moment, if they don't really use it as a factor, to be honest, in terms of domestic performances. But I think when your best players are playing domestically, that improves it for everyone. And I suppose a good comparison again is Australia. So many of their players in the Australian setup are so reluctant not to play domestic cricket, to the extent sometimes where Alyssa Healy rocks up for club cricket sometimes as well.
Well, you talked to Lisa Stalker about this, weren't you? And sort of saying, what did she say?
So I was interested to know how they managed the Australian players when it came to their WNCL, which is their 50-over competition, and their WBBL, which is obviously the equivalent of our 100 competition. And I just said, like, what happens with your Australian players? Do they play in it from game one and all the way through? Because obviously after this, they're going into their WBBL games. And she just said they wouldn't not play. They just wouldn't, because they want to play. So I suppose it's wanting your international players to go and be part of those squads, because it just helps the standard of cricket across the board. And I know we've sort of gone off piece there because we're obviously talking about why they're out and things. But again, it's just something that I think both of us agree could be looked at, is how many more games could they be playing, or should they be playing, really?
And it was me that took us off piece, and I apologise. Let's get back to the question. Erica Morris. Hello, Erica. Erica tweets.
Another Aussie.
Yeah. I don't know why, though. She probably knows more about it than we do, right? She tweets so many stats and analysis and things like that about the game, about the women's game, about the men's game and stuff like that. But she's asked us a question anyway. So thank you, Erica. you probably know more about it than we do. She says, did England not playing a game in Dubai play a significant part in this loss? Should Maya Bouchier continue as an opener, or does her running need to improve? I'll quickly go on this one.
Yeah, go on, you go.
Did not playing a game in Dubai play a significant part? No, absolutely not. Categorically not. Don't give me that. That's absolutely garbage. Anyone who uses that as an excuse is utter garbage. Should Bush continue as an opener, or does her running need to improve? I will answer yes and yes. Now, I still think we've got to remember that Maya Boucher is relatively new into international cricket. Relatively new. She has made the opener, you know, her and Danny White-Hodge have made sort of like got this partnership going at the top of the order. I think she has the game for it. I think she needed to learn a lot quicker how to play conditions over in Dubai. That is something that she will learn from. Yeah. And should you maybe have taken an opener? I don't know. I don't necessarily buy into that. Should you have taken an opener who knows a bit more about the conditions? I actually wonder about Tammy Beaumont. I do.
Yeah.
Given her ability to play spin, but she's not been part. England wanted to go in a certain way. And I don't think you necessarily cast aside a player in that respect. But I would like to have seen Tammy Beaumont talked about in, you know, given her record in T20 cricket recently, or 100 cricket and stuff, which has been pretty good. She didn't have a great year this year, but previous year she did. And she plays spin very, very well. So I'd like that to have been talked about. Anyway, back to Boosh. I think this is a player who's got a lot of potential still and a lot of time to grow. She is the type of player you want. She is fit. She is brilliant in the outfield. Stop your laughing now, because I'm telling you, it's a hill that I'm going to die on, because we have seen a lid.
I'm with you.
Trust me, everybody listening or watching, she's just had a stinking night.
Yeah.
Right? She is a serious fielder, one of the best, I would argue, in the country, if not boundary rider in the world, and she's had a horror night. So this is not me being nice to Maya. This is what having watched her for a long, long time. Yeah. Does she need to improve her running between the wicket? Yeah, she does. She's a bit of a ball watcher. There's a little bit of tentative. You've got to absolutely know your call and know your partner. And, you know, Annie's been doing it a long time. So that would be my say on that particular question.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you on the Dubai question as well. And with the Boosh, I think she's got a brilliant technique, particularly against a new ball. So, yeah, it's just she just needs to find a way to be more assertive, to have a bit more focus with the running between the wickets and take more ownership. But she is just at the start of her career, and I'm sure she's got a long way to go. So, yeah, I England will stick with her, I think, for the reasons that you said as well.
Okay. Thank you so much for your questions. Keep them always coming in. I mean, any single question that you've got for either of us at any time, we're more than happy to try and answer. You might not like the answer, but we will answer the question that you ask. Just a quick word, Lyd, as we've not mentioned it, but I think it's well worth doing. There's another country in a similar position to England, and that is India. And I, again, staggered, shocked, amazed that they were out of the tournament at the group stage as well, given that lineup, which I keep looking at going, how on earth has this happened? There are sort of issues there as well, because, you know, of two of the big three who are the best resourced and best funded teams in the competition have not got through to the semi-finals. And that defeat against New Zealand basically meant that they were struggling from there on in. Obviously, lost to Australia, but this is a seriously good side who are not in the semi-finals. Where do they go from here?
Yeah, I mean it was. I was with you in terms of when you look at the list of names in that Indian side, you think they could and should be winning a World Cup sometime soon. But I think with all teams, it's about how do they gel, how clear are their individual roles, and what type of T20 cricket do they want to play. And if you've got bit parts from different suggestions or whatever, you don't get a good outcome. The one game that really surprised me actually was after that loss against New Zealand. They had Pakistan, and they really needed to up their net run rate, because they were in a situation where it was going to come down to that. And I wonder if they were just more worried about maybe losing to Pakistan rather than winning the game in a good fashion, which would have then got their net run rate to a point where it needed to be. That was the one thing I was surprised about with their performance in the World Cup. But yeah, where do they go from here? I mean, obviously the WPL has got a big role to play, I think, in galvanising who are the best Indian players in the country. And with how many players, how many people are in the country, Daggers? What would it be?
A billion.
So it must be.
I've just thrown that number out. It could be like.
I've put you on the spot there, haven't I?
You have. Give me sort of seven general knowledge questions all at once. Why don't you? I'm going to say a billion.
Okay. But there we go.
I'm not going to be massively far off there.
No.
But
my point is.
36.
My point is it's a big talent pool and yeah, over time you'd hope that they would be challenging more than they did this time round. What about you?
I look at that side and I think, well, I would have picked that side. That's the side.
Yes,
selected, given, you know, when you look at Smriti and Shefali and then Harmanpreet and Jemima and then Rishi Ghosh and Deepti Sharma. Look at that top six. It's an astonishingly good top six. Now, if I had my own personal preference, I'd back Jemmy at three and I'd back Deepti at five and Rishi at six, right? Mm. That's what I would do. I want the left-hander in at five and I think she can play just as big a role as Rishi Ghosh.
Yeah.
And I look at that top six, of which, obviously, Deepti is your all-rounder. I think there's very few better, more talented top sixes in world cricket than that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I like the fact that S. Asher was selected. She didn't play in the final game. Was she injured? I can't remember. Anyway,
yeah.
I don't think she played in the final game that India did. But I like the fact that S. Asher was picked from the WPL. And her performances warranted that. And I love Shreyanka Patil. I think she's a fabulous young cricketer. Great character, great energy, bowls the really difficult overs at the beginning and at the death as well. And for an off spinner, that's quite the skill to have.
Yeah.
Ruka Singh Thakur, I think she bowled pretty well. I think she bowls better for India than she does in the domestic competition. But there's perfectly reasonable. There's young bowlers coming through. I know she bowled all right. I'm still wondering about Arundhati Reddy as maybe a potentially sort of a weaker link. But I mean, I have no massive issues with this. Look at that side. This is a good side.
Yeah.
It's a really, really good side. Yeah. So they will feel probably just as bad as England will do by not being in the knockout stages. But we shall wait and see how all of that transpires. It's going to be interesting as well, just to finish off, that if sides do want to reset or do want to make a change of approach or whatever it is, very little time to do it because there's an ICC tournament every year for the next 3 years. You're always building up to those particular games. I think that's pretty much covered it.
Yes.
Go and get yourself some rest. It's way past your bedtime now. It's 20:10 your time in the UAE. And I'm going to put dinner on. I'm chefing this evening. Jacket potatoes and chicken.
Lovely.
Any questions you have, please get them in. You can comment below on our YouTube channel. Please subscribe at Daggers and Lids on YouTube, or you can get in touch with us via our social media channels at Charles Dagnall, at Lydia Greenway. But thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. Lids, we'll see each other after the final.
Yes, we will. Looking forward to it.
Can't wait.